We're sisters, best friends, and authors on a mission to help you stoke your creative fire and live the life of your dreams. We believe that purpose fuels passion and that creativity is your secret weapon for mass construction. There's never been a better time to bless the world with your dream realized. You're listening to The Kate and Abby Show.
What's up, guys? Welcome back to another episode of The Kate and Abby Show. We're thrilled to have you here with us today. We're going to be unpacking a very interesting topic, something we haven't touched on in previous episodes, and that is how to write better tropes. And that you might chuckle when you hear that because you're like, tropes? You know, tropes are something that should be avoided. But that's exactly what we're going to talk about today, is should tropes or cliches in fiction be avoided? Or are there more layers and complexities to be unpacked in this topic? Do we really hate these cliches and tropes as much as we think we do, when there are every single day many trope-filled books on best-selling lists, etc., etc.? Tons of books that have tropes are filled with great reviews, 5-star reviews online, and so obviously there is a reader base that wants to engage with these cliches and tropes. So we're going to talk about, is there a right way to do them? Is there a wrong way to do them? How can we tackle writing something that has been done and over and over again, but putting our own unique spin on it and having confidence in the fact that even though it's been done before, we're going to do it in a way that's unique to us as an individual writer. So grab a notebook, grab a cup of coffee, let's dive into this. But before we start unpacking this,
we have to thank our sponsors, who are you guys. You're the ones who support this show and keep it going, and we so appreciate your help. We're so grateful for all of you amazing patrons. If you get value out of this podcast and if you enjoy listening without any interruptions or sponsorships, then head over to patreon.com/thekateandabbyshow and get access to exclusive monthly live hangout sessions with me and Kate. That's something that we do special for the Patreon community every month. We sit down and have a super chill hangout session with the patrons of the podcast, and it's really a fun environment because it's a smaller group and we can talk to you guys a lot more and have just deeper conversations about story and creativity and living your best life. So hope to see you over there. Thank you to all of our amazing patrons for making this show possible.
Another great way to support us as well is to go check out our books. If you enjoy hearing us talk about writing, we are authors too.
Yes.
We're both independent authors. And so if you like what we're talking about, you might just like what we write about as well. And you can find all of our books down in the description below. Abby has a couple amazing books out there. She's getting ready to release another book. We're writing some books together. I have a whole series. So check those out. You will probably really enjoy checking out our writing. Thank you guys so much for your support. So, writing better tropes.
Yeah, let's get into this.
So, there's a lot of cliches out there.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of mixed advice that you'll find online about whether or not you should be really engaging these in your writing or avoiding them.
Yeah.
So what's the first thing you would tell a writer who is maybe hesitant or afraid to write something that they feel is cliche or tropey or it's been done before?
The first thing I would say is examine the reason why you want to do it. Is it because you actually love it and you feel attracted to this trope, but you're like, oh, maybe it's too cliche, maybe too many people have done it, but I really love it and I really love reading it? If so, then you should do it. You should write the book you want to read. Or if the answer to that question is, I'm doing it because I think that there is an audience for this and I think that it will sell more or it'll be more attractive, more marketable, then that's not really a good reason to do it. And you'll find that you don't actually last very long writing that subgenre or trope or whatever it may be, because your heart isn't really in it. You're just kind of doing it because you think that you should jump on this bandwagon because, like, everyone's doing it. So if it seems like everyone's doing this, but I really love it, then you should still follow your heart on it, I think, and write the book that you want to read, because that's very important to love it, to have fun doing it. And every person, every author's favorite tropes or favorite cliches or favorite plot devices will be different. You know, different assortment of what your likes and dislikes are. And that assortment kind of creates those unique ingredients that only you can put together into this story. So I think it should be not so much like, oh, there's too many stories like this, I shouldn't do it. But if there are a lot of stories that have similarities like this, why do you feel attracted to it? Mm. You know, and really self-examining that.
Yeah.
And I think if the love is there, the excitement is there, then that's something to pursue.
And then on the flip side of that coin, there's also writers who love a certain trope or whatever, but they feel that the market or audience or the niche for that type of writing is oversaturated. Mm. So they're like, even though I really wish I could be writing this, I feel like I need to step back from that and not write that specific thing that I love because I feel the market is oversaturated. So it's interesting because you'll have writers who want to engage that because there's a demand, and then also writers who are afraid to engage that because there might be oversaturation in that niche's market. So really, I feel like you and I have both the same type of thinking here, and that you really need to check with your heart and see what is it that you truly love to write, because that is going to show through in your writing, that love, that, and you talked about this in a recent video as well, that finding the book that feels like your comfort food, like your comfort yes. food book, and that love and addictive nature is going to shine through in the writing itself. Your reader is going to be able to pick up on the fact that, wow, this author clearly really enjoyed writing this story.
Right.
Yeah. And the reverse is true as well. If it's something that you're really not enjoying writing and you're kind of just forcing yourself to do it, that can also become apparent in the finished product. Your reader can pick up on the fact that maybe you didn't really enjoy writing this that much.
Yeah, very true. Yeah, so I think that's important to pay attention to. Like, what's your intention? What's your heart? What is your heart telling you to do? And follow that as your guide. But there are a few tropes that I know we want to discuss in particular, mm-hmm. and how to, like, take these cliches and make them not so cliche. So if you have a particular trope in mind, maybe we're going to talk about it in this episode.
Because we're going to break down six.
Yes.
Six really popular ones.
Yes.
And kind of maybe debunk some of these myths about whether or not you should write these and how you can put your own unique spin on them.
Exactly. Yeah. So let's jump right into that. The first big trope, big cliche that we see a lot in fiction, especially YA fiction for some reason, is the chosen one. The chosen one cliche of, like, you have this protagonist who is meant to be, like, called to this higher purpose, whether they are, like, superhuman or they were born with some special power or they are written into some ancient prophecy or something. Like, they are the chosen one who's going to save the world or save whatever they need to save. Mm-hmm. You know, like some really demanding higher calling that this character is made aware of. And we've seen this done again and again in wildly popular stories. So there's a reason why people like it, obviously. Mm-hmm. There's a reason why readers are, why they gravitate towards this story. And I think it's because, not to get like super philosophical, but I think it's because, like, deep down, we all feel like we need to have a sense of higher purpose.
Yeah.
And we kind of want to step into the shoes of a person who's, like, destined to have this higher purpose and save the world. So it's a cool experience to, like, see this narrative unfold through the eyes of a character who is destined for greatness, you know?
Right.
But you also don't want to make it too cliche that, like, this just feels like every other chosen one mm-hmm. story.
Right. But then like, the opposite of that is like, not something you'd want to write either. Because
right.
the opposite of that is that there no one's the chosen one.
Yeah.
There's really nothing special about the main character at all. And no one really has a purpose in the book. And no one really rises to the challenge to conquer the evil or save the world.
Yeah, so, like, there's no story there.
Right, you know? So
it's not that you have to, like, completely avoid the cliche.
Yeah, it's finding your own unique story for your main character as the chosen one, what is the internal conflict? I feel like that's the aspect that makes it interesting.
Yeah.
And you can get so unique with that. Why is it that they're compelled to go on this transformative journey?
Yeah, because otherwise the chosen one can very easily become the punching bag for the plot or the circumstances of the story, and that it's like, well, you know, it doesn't matter what this character's conflict is. They're destined to be great, so they are going to be shoved into this story where they're forced to overcome all these things, not because of who they are or their internal struggle, but just because they're the chosen one. So, like, that can very easily become very plot-driven when you're not digging deeper into the layers of, like, okay, who's this character? Where do they come from? What are they personally dealing with?
And what are their flaws?
Yeah, exactly. What are their flaws? That's another big thing, is, like, the flawless main character, which they quickly become a punching bag for the plot because there's no internal motive driving their actions. It's just rolling with the punches of the plot, you know? So yeah, digging more into your main character, if you're writing like a chosen one scenario, digging more into the main character's internal conflict, what are their fatal flaws? What are their misbeliefs? That's a really good place to start with their misbeliefs and figuring out where those misbeliefs came from, something in their past maybe that made them believe this thing about themselves or about the world. And what are the fears and goals that they are currently struggling with, apart from whatever the external forces are trying to do to them, you know?
Right, because I think as soon as we start delving into who they are as a character, what their flaws are, what their internal struggles are, we connect with them as a character. When that character connection isn't there, we start thinking about just the overarching plot of the fact, okay, this is a chosen one story. What gets us thinking about the structure? When we're pulling back and thinking about the structure, it's because we're not submersed in the story. It's the same with books and film. In film, if we pull back and start thinking about the actors, we start thinking about the film structure. We're actually no longer submersed in the moment of the film. In the storytelling aspect, we're pulling back and we're thinking about structure. So really, what causes someone to think about the cliche or to think about the trope, whatever you want to call it, is when they are not engaged with the character, they're pulling back and they're thinking about the structure. So what is it that's causing them to not engage? Usually it's flatness of the character. We're not seeing the depth of that character. And so that leaves the reader's mind to wander freely and think more about the story structure, to think, okay, this is, you know, going to be the chosen one saves the world kind of story. But when we start engaging with the intricacies of the character, those layers of complexity, we're not thinking about the overarching plot. We're grounded in that character, in their shoes, in every moment they're experiencing. That's what we're grounding in. We're not pulling back to look at these structural things. So I think that's one of the things that really helps the reader to submerse in that character.
Yeah, 100%. You can pretty much use all the same character building advice that we talk about any other character with a chosen one character. Second cliche is love triangles. Some people love them, some people hate them. I feel like they've garnered a lot more hate in the past like 10 years because it's been overdone a lot. But you have to ask, why was it overdone? Right. And why do people feel attracted to the concept of a love triangle, even if part of them is like, oh, this is so cliche, I hate it. There's some part of a lot of people that are attracted to this cliche. And it's worth thinking about because you can bring different complexities and layers to a love triangle. I'm like specifically thinking of the fact that I have a love triangle in my upcoming book, the Lighthouse book. And it's kind of different and offbeat, like the way that it happens. I'm not going to like give you any spoilers, but I have mentioned in my Instagram posts that there's a love triangle involved. And it's fun because it was fun to write because I was able to kind of take this cliche, this trope that some people are like, no, don't do love triangles, and see like, okay, how can I make this more original and unique and like put a different spin on it? so that you almost don't even notice it's a love triangle until you're like way deep in the book and you're like, wait a minute. But yeah, and I say that because there are ways to make love triangles more unique and not just your run-of-the-mill, like, there's a female protagonist and then two guys that she kind of likes but can't figure out, like, which one she likes more. And, like, one is, like, sweet, cinnamon roll, wholesome, and the other one is, like, more of a bad boy, edgy, drives a motorcycle. It's, like, it's so cliche because we've seen it so many times. Like, that premise has no real depth or conflict to it, you know? And so that's why I think it's tired and, like, annoying to see a lot, because there aren't many layers to the characters' conflicts. But when you start individually developing the characters, and then we have three of them and we throw them into the, you know, into the triangle together.
Yeah.
Then, because we have already built these intricate conflicts as individuals, the chemistry of all of them together creates something special.
Exactly.
You know, yeah. it's not just the character archetypes, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Of like, you know, fill in the blank female protagonist and good boy, bad boy. You know?
Right.
It's like there's more depth and layers to the characters than just like character archetypes, I guess I would call them.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So adding those layers and making the character, really rooting us, once again, rooting us in the characters.
Yeah.
And even if it is, even if you're writing something that's really simple, like what I described, you know, one really wholesome guy and then the guy who rides a motorcycle, you can even make that interesting. And
yeah.
Because regardless of your feelings about love triangles, whether you like them or dislike them, the facts are that there's an enormous market that supports these types of stories, because there's very highly successful books and films that are based on very simple plots like that. But what makes them successful, there's a lot of elements, of course, for each one. Each one's different.
I think one of the things is that there's like this burning question of like, how is it going to end?
Right. I think that's part of it. You just want to know what happens next. It's like an unanswered question.
Yeah.
But you can take that to the next level by adding the character complexity.
Yeah.
Especially if you're writing perhaps a series, that's several books. If you want to keep your readers engaged, you know, the question will only keep them engaged so long without the character development there. So developing those characters, even if it feels like a very simple premise, think about, you know, the average person, like, you don't have, like, all this insane stuff, like, in fiction happening in your everyday life, but your own life day to day, even if it seems like not a lot's happening on a daily basis, is so complex and interesting, not because of what's happening to you on a daily basis, but because of who you are internally, because of what's going on inside of you. You're learning and you're changing and you're transforming every day. So let's take that very real reality and apply that to our characters. Let's treat them like real human beings and delve into what some of those conflicts are, and it's going to just make it that much more engaging.
Yeah, I agree. Third cliche, superheroes. What do you know? I have superpowers.
Yeah.
The unexpected superpowers, which, you know, you see done a lot in like a lot of superhero stories and
Marvel,
yeah, Marvel. But there are ways that it can be done really well and then ways that it can be lackluster. Mm-hmm. And like, it might be the exact same premise. And I know you and I have both discussed this at length, like, and we've seen it across even like Marvel films. Like, some of them have like a really very gripping, very unique, the way that the character is built and developed, and then others are like a little more lackluster or flat because of the way that the character is not as developed. And so again, you know, every point we're just reiterating the character development thing, but don't shy away from like unexpected superpowers that are realized throughout the book trope, because that can actually be really fun and exciting. Kate and I have actually written that too. But and
you, yeah, I was going to say, right, the blood race is definitely, actually the blood race has several of these in it.
Yeah,
it has love triangle. It has the chosen one. It has the chosen one. it has a lot of these. So that's the thing, is you can also blend stuff and make it unique. This is about you as the individual writer. You can also let go of this concept of these being tropes. Just because someone has done something other than you, like there's other people out there doing it, doesn't mean you shouldn't do it. You know what I mean? It kind of, it almost kind of takes us back to like these childhood days of like, oh, they, my friends are already doing that, so now I can't. It's like, why can't you all do it? You know what I mean? It's like, it's kind of a childish concept when we break it down enough. It's like, oh, those kids chose the, you know, red balloon, so now I can't choose that one. You know what I mean? That concept. It's like that. We don't need to shy away from something, a storyline, a plot device, just because it's been heavily used. There has been highly, highly successful books and films and video games, whatever, you name it, that have been done many times over. But the writer, the author, put their own original spin on it and breathed new life and became highly successful. So it's not something you should shy away from. You should lean into it. Own it. Don't be afraid of it.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, so with writing a superhero trope, don't shy away from it. Just make your superhero human above all else.
Right.
And dig into those layers of complexity. Like, what do they personally have to deal with because of their own conflicts now in the mix with the superpower conflict?
Right.
And fourth cliche, this is it, the apocalypse. Characters facing an apocalyptic scenario. And this isn't so much a cliche as it is like it's really a genre, I guess. It's a subgenre. The apocalyptic scenario that your characters are forced into and they kind of have to survive and deal with what's going on. And that can be part of a really compelling story, but it can't be all of it, you know? It can't just be like, well, here's my story idea. The apocalypse happens and like everything blows up and cities fall down and maybe there's like aliens or something and my group of unlikely heroes have to band together and survive. Okay.
Right.
That's not very compelling. You might have a good external forces at play. You might have a good strong setup for that. But the internal forces at play is really the most important, most crucial thing. Like, that is going to be what's going to invest your reader emotionally, make them empathize with your characters. Because we can't empathize with the apocalypse. We can't empathize with just, like, bad things happening and you have to survive. This is, like, my whole point about survival as a genre, like survival stories, survival films, and I've mentioned this in my 3X story structure series, and how that's not enough. Like, you have to dig deeper into more than just a life and death scenario. What will happen if this character survives? Why does survival matter to this character other than they don't want to die? Like, we all don't want to die. Like, everyone wants to survive. So how does that make any character different from another?
Why does it matter?
Yeah.
What is it they're looking forward to? What are their dreams? What are their greatest fears?
Right.
Making the apocalypse personal for them.
Exactly.
Not just the overarching apocalypse, but what is the personal tragedy that has happened or will happen if they don't succeed at XYZ and survive?
Yeah, exactly. And bringing their personal goals and fears and dreams into the mix as well, because it's going to affect every character differently. And if you're finding that your protagonist could be, like, replaced with any of the other characters and it would be the same story, then you need to go back to the drawing board with your characters and dig deeper into their conflicts and develop them better. And make your reader feel emotionally connected to your protagonist, not just like, okay, well, I could be following any of these characters and it'd be the same exact story.
Right. Exactly. So true.
Fifth cliche, the bad guy who is pure evil, or the villain who just is a villain because he likes being a villain.
No particular reason. Just wants to destroy the world and everything good and kind, but doesn't
this
know
is probably
why.
My hatest.
Yeah.
Cliche. Like, whenever I see it in a movie or a book, I'm like, oh my gosh, why?
Yeah.
Why? Like, it's so easy to just come up with a little bit, just a little bit of personal conflict for this villain. Mm-hmm. I find villains are, like, even easier to come up with conflict for them than heroes.
Yeah, we're doing a lot of that in our series that we're writing. Especially you.
Yeah. Well, you're doing a lot, too. Yeah. I feel like the villain that I'm primarily writing has more of a darker, more tragic past.
Yours is, there's several villains.
Yeah.
We could go into more, but I feel like I'm going to say spoilers for
mistake. Yeah, we don't want to accidentally spoil.
But coming, so that's something we've seen over and over and over again in, like, superhero films and books and comic books, whatever, you name it, where the villain doesn't really have any internal conflict. They're just evil because...
Period, because...
It can leave the story feeling a little flat, and you can instantly take your storyline to the next level by giving the villain a personality, giving them a reason, even if their reason is born out of fear and misguidance.
Yeah, that's where it should be really born out of, is like what's happened to them to create a fatal flaw. And so, a flaw that's like so deeply rooted, a misbelief that's so firmly held on to that it has turned them into a monster.
Exactly.
You know, it's a really interesting exploration of human nature and psychology. And it can be really interesting to explore the layers of that because your character is a result of what's happened to them.
Right.
You know, so making your villain more tragic, you know, and digging into, okay, well, they were good at one point. They weren't born evil. So what happened? And even if you just have to write backstory for yourself, like, it doesn't even need to go in the book necessarily. It probably should be referenced or at least pointed to, alluded to. But even just writing backstory for yourself and figuring out, okay, what has led up to this villain being the way they are? How is it personal to them, what they're doing? Why are they trying to accomplish what they want? And how is it connected to their fatal flaw? And where did that fatal flaw come from? Even just those few basic questions will take your villain to a way better level than most cliche villains.
I think it can also be helpful to not think of your story in terms of hero, villain, but to think of your story in terms of you're writing about two people who have made choices in their lives and what has brought them to where they are now. They're both just people. Mm-hmm. Rather than thinking this is a villain, this is a hero, and automatically assigning these roles to them, think of them both as people who have just made different choices in life, and those choices have brought them to completely different and possibly polarizing positions. And how did those choices affect them? What caused them to make those choices? And that's when you get into all the good, like, gut-wrenching internal conflict, and that's where the story is found. And once again, when we're submersed in the character, we're not pulling back and thinking about the structure. We're not thinking about, oh, this is just one of those bad guy wants to destroy the world and the hero does everything right stories. We're thinking about, wow, like, this is so complex. I'm trying to understand this character. I feel like I almost feel sympathy for this character. And that was one thing that I had so many people who read my follow-up series, the Sparrow series, which was the follow-up to my Blood Race books. I don't even like to call them a villain because I loved them so much, but they were more like an anti-hero of their own story. And everyone really loved this character, the character of Corporal Price.
Yes.
And he kind of is acting out this bit of a villain role. He's on a negative trajectory, but his reasons are so compelling that you're kind of falling in love with this character as you're reading about them. And I had so many readers tell me, like, I felt like I was on the brink of tears reading about this character. It's like, that's who your villain or anti-hero can be when you give them those reasons and complexities.
Yes, 100%. Yeah. You did a really good job with that in the Sparrow series.
And it was fun to write, too.
For people who want to write that negative character arc and make it feel believable, check out my 2-part video series that I did on negative character arcs. The first video, I go into like the different types of negative character arc, and then the second one, I go into, it's more of like a science of story, actually, because I go into 2 different examples of the negative arc, and it's very loaded, those 2 videos, so check those out. So the 6th and final cliche trope is dysfunctional families. Mm. I like to see this so much mm-hmm. in YA books especially, because there's usually more of a focus on family in YA books, but other books as well. And I feel like the dysfunctional family trope can sometimes just feel like lazy writing, because it's like, we don't really want to write complex family relationships, so just have them all be like dysfunctional and chaotic and kind of not get along, or the parents are gone, or the parents are dead, or somebody's just like lots of family members are just missing, and
or they kind of are all at odds or hate each other for reasons that are never gone into. Like, we all just are, like, mean and hate each other.
Yeah.
Like, we just don't get along, even though why? We never go into that. We don't know, but they just don't. They don't because the plot needs them to not get along.
Right. And it's like, well, wait a minute. There's so many different layers of complexity to explore there. Like, especially with family relationships, it's like set in stone, this is my relationship with this person, and, you know, it's very clear and obvious, and I don't even know, like, the words to describe what I'm trying to say.
There's a lot of evolution.
Yeah.
There are relationships in motion.
Yeah, and different layers to it, you know? Like, mixed emotions, mm-hmm. I guess. Like, especially with family relationships, more so than friends or coworkers. Romantic relationships. Obviously, with romantic relationships, you have a lot of mixed emotions. But I think with family, especially because you're, like, all kind of forced to be together at one time or another, there's lots of conflict to explore there. And if there is conflict or dysfunction in the family, then can we spend a little time at least exploring why? Or maybe the history behind it. Even if you don't go super deep into it, it's still... it shines, I notice, when I see that in stories, even when it's a little bit deeper, you know, touched on than just glazed over, it really stands out as, like, something to think about, you know, something to dwell on, and something that makes you think about it after you finish the story. And those complexities, I think, can add a lot of depth to the story, more so than just... you know, we're dysfunctional, or the parents are missing, or, like, we don't really want to explain it. It's just more convenient this way to not ever mention the family. It's like, well, this could actually be an interesting opportunity to go deeper into the characters' conflicts and their pasts and what made them this way. I mean, this was something that I never used to appreciate that much until probably, like, 3 or 4 years ago. In my own writing, and I really started digging deeper into relationships between characters and really making that a part of my outlining process. Because even though it doesn't necessarily have a timeline, it might have a timeline in that the relationships might change over the course of the story, but where do we begin? You know, when we first meet these characters, what are their relationships with each other, and where has that come from? Because you're walking into a world with these people who have always existed, really, you know?
Right.
And you kind of, if you start thinking about it that way, then you see they have pasts. And they have conflicts that happened in the past that have shaped who they are. And that just makes it feel so much more realistic,
mm-hmm.
I find.
Yeah, and we've been exploring that a lot with the series we're writing.
Yeah.
The family dynamic.
Yeah.
Because the 2 characters, which I think it's okay to say that, like, they're siblings. And so writing those dynamics of who they are as siblings, what they mean to each other, what's in the past that has brought about feelings of angst or feelings of love or compassion. Now, what happened in the past that created that? There's like so many layers to that that we've been exploring, so much backstory we've written, and especially that Abby's written, that's not even in the books themselves, but we're drawing from that.
Right.
So much of what we talk about is about what happened in the past that has made these characters who they are now and who they are to each other. Mm-hmm. And these dynamics, as with real families, are constantly in flux. They're constantly evolving and changing. Mm-hmm. You have with siblings, you have the aspects of growing up, age differences, and what those ever changing environments, how that causes them to change their relationships with each other, how that evolves over time. With couples, you have the same, like, this chemistry that goes on this amazing journey over years, and the relationship with parents and children and how that changes when they're at these different stages. And so you have all these moving parts and pieces that can cause dysfunction, that can cause joy, that can cause humor, that can cause serious discussion, and figuring out what are some of the pieces of backstory, maybe even going into for your own purposes, like what's some of the, where did these people come from?
Yes.
Where did they come from? What was their inception? What made them who they are now? And that's going to affect their relationships with each other.
Yeah. And if you're struggling with like figuring that out, what I've been doing lately is just literally taking two characters that have a lot of scenes together and opening a new document in my Scrivener and writing, okay, this character and this character, and just start like writing a free flow of thought on their history together and what their relationship is like, how it's changed over the past, over the course of the past, and what it's like now.
Just
doing that, like, just a really quick free flow of thought and see what comes of it, you know, and do that for each character pairing. So maybe you have a main character and their mom, main character and their brother, main character and their father, main character and their teacher, you know, whoever it is in this character's world, what's the relationship like? Where has it been? Where is it going to go in the story?
And a great example of that, too, if you haven't read Abby's second book, which is the sequel, follow-up book to 100 Days of Sunlight, which is the Weston and Tessa's best Christmas ever book. But it delves deeply into the relationship with Tessa, the main character, and her mother, who has been kind of estranged and was not in book one, but she's mentioned. And now we're bringing her into the mix in book two. And it just resurrects all these really deeply seated emotions that they have for each other. Perfectly done. Everything we're saying here, Abby executed super well in that book. So check that out if you want, like, give me a good story example.
Yeah.
That's a really good example of it's lots of dysfunction, humor, compassionate, thoughtful moments out of this, you know, all these stirring emotions that two family members have for each other.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Yeah. I think that was a good example.
Such a good story.
Because it's more complex than just like, it's always changing, like you're saying.
Just like with real people.
Yeah.
Just like with, you know, if you need inspiration, think of your own family.
Yeah. You know? That can be a really good place to start. I think the reason I love writing siblings so much is because we're very close.
Yeah, we draw so much from who we are.
Yeah.
And, like, infuse that.
Yes. It's great. I love it.
Me too.
So, yeah, awesome. Those are the 6 cliche tropes and how to make them not so cliche. To recap, there's nothing wrong with writing cliche tropes that you've seen done a lot before. Remember that they're popular for a reason. They have often become bestsellers for a reason. So there's nothing wrong with writing these tropes. You just have to figure out ways to make them more unique and put your own spin on it. And finding the complexities and why it matters to the characters is what's going to help you every time. Like, character development. I think that's the bottom line. Like, dig deep into character development and make your characters have rich internal conflict. Everyone has a flaw, fatal flaw, misbelief. Everyone has their own unique goals and dreams and fears. And each character has these unique layers to them that make them different from all the other characters. And if you do that, you can write any cliche, any trope, any genre and make it powerful and emotionally compelling because you started with why it matters, not just what happens.
Mm-hmm. And I think too, you know, we're calling them tropes and cliches here for the sake of being able to all understand this together. But you can also remove those labels and liberate yourself as an author to lean into your story and realize this is your story. This is not just some cliche. This is not just something that's been done before. No one has ever done what you are actively doing. And so maybe when you sit down at your writing desk or in your writing space, give yourself permission to let go of these labels or these looming ideas of, oh, this is oversaturated market. Oh, this has been done before. You know, I won't be able to bring enough originality to it. Just free yourself from that and say to yourself, you know what? No one is able to write this story that I'm writing because it's uniquely mine. And that is really, that's really the crux of the matter. That's really the truth, is that this is your story and you can remove the labels and, yeah, and just let yourself tell your unique story. Lean into the experience.
So true. I love it. So hopefully you guys got a lot of value out of this episode. If you did, comment below and tell us your thoughts. Join the discussion. We would love to hear what you think of this whole topic and what your favorite tropes are. Also, if you haven't seen the video version of this podcast, you can find that on Kate's YouTube channel, which is youtube.com/KAEmmons. Thank you again to our amazing patrons who make this show possible, make it free of interruptions. We appreciate you guys so much. Love you so much. If you want to help support this podcast, go to patreon.com/thekateandabbyshow and help us keep it alive and free of interruptions. We are going to have a live hangout session for the Patreon community next week. So keep an eye out for that announcement, and we hope to see you guys over there. Thank you again for listening, and until next time,
stay stoked
and rock on.